This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by ChristianAudio.com. Listeners of the Gospel Coalition podcast can get 50% off of their audiobook or audio Bible purchases from Christian Audio for a limited time. Browse ChristianAudio.com and use discount code TGC50 at checkout before this offer ends on September 30th, 2016. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. Today's podcast is a conversation with TGC editor Jason Cook and Pastor Cameron Triggs about how to reach a generation shaped by hip-hop culture.
Cam, thanks so much for joining me today, brother.
Hey, man, thank you for the invitation. I look forward to the discussion today.
Yes, indeed. Well, I had the opportunity to sit in and listen to your talk at Legacy Conference on preaching to the hip hop generation. And I thought it was so well done, so thoughtful, so cogent, so helpful. But before we begin, would you define what exactly is the hip hop generation?
Yeah, most definitely. In that workshop, I kind of used a broad term. Now, there is more of a specific term that this hip-hop generation phraseology actually came into being. A guy named Bakari Kitwana has written on this extensively, and he kind of puts this hip-hop generation from 1965 to 1984, kind of surveying the development of this hip-hop genre. But when I talk about this primarily to churches or leaders, especially within the evangelical context, man, I'm using this term loosely to describe millennials. I'm using this term to describe teens influenced by or produced under this specific context that's formed by the hip hop genre. And a major point of using this terminology I'm trying to get across is hip hop is not just a music, it's a culture. It's not just a genre. It has art, it has philosophy, it has philosophers. It has its own language. It has its own form of community and community leaders and even symbols. And so hip hop culture transcends race as well. A lot of people might look at hip hop culture and think it's only the black community or it's only urban youth. But if you look at the commercialization of hip hop, if you look at the globalization of hip hop, it transcends the black race. It transcends the urban context. It's actually international. And I would even argue, man, it's one of the predominant cultures that we face here in America, especially amongst millennials and next generation coming up.
Man, that's really good. One of the things you said was hip hop as a culture has its artists. It has its philosophers. One of those philosophers you talked about in your talk was Tupac. Primarily from a poet standpoint, but also from a philosophy standpoint. Speak to that, the philosophy standpoint, the poetry aspect in cultivating and developing what we know hip hop to be today.
Yeah, so it's definitely an art form, right? It's definitely a prophetic art form. And when I say that, I mean not in terms of predicting the future, but it speaks to the current context and situations. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at a artist like Tupac, you have to really analyze him as a personality, and he can't be compartmentalized. He can't be just this thug. He can't just be this demagogue of everything that's wrong in the urban context. When you actually look at the catalog of his lyrics, when you look at his imagery, you'll begin to see that, man, Tupac is really a kind of a prophetic pragmatist. I think that's kind of a word. He's speaking into a situation, but he's looking at the ills of the situation, and he's saying, this doesn't work, what will work? And if you look at Tupac, man, he's spiritual. He's always talking about eternal things. He's talking about heaven and hell. He's talking about evil. He's talking about demons sometimes. And so you have this poet who is using an art form that is impacting a culture. And for us as pastors, ministers, and theologians, we have to engage that. We have to understand that if we have these theological categories, well, man, Tupac has created an image of God. He still reflects the image of God, regardless of that his culture may flesh out that image differently than my context. What is redeemable about what Tupac is saying? We can also say that there's some bad things, of course, but what is redeemable? Where is the image of God being reflected in his poetry? Where's the image of God being reflected in his discontent for the context he finds himself in? And so I think we see that in Acts 17, right? When Paul is on Mars Hill, he interacts and he engages with their poets and their philosophers, and he notices that there's common grace. He just doesn't start with total depravity. He just doesn't start with saying that you guys are completely sinful, you don't know anything. No, when he looks at their poets and their philosophers, he sees that there is a commonality. There is a point of contact. Now, it's not fully fleshed out, nor is it consistent with reality, but it is a point where he can interject the gospel. But he can only do that if he's engaged in that context, if he's observing that context and knows their artists and their philosophers.
Man, that's really good. And so when I think about Tupac, I think about a modern day philosopher that is very similar to Tupac, and that's Kendrick Lamar. Right. Yeah. So you got Tupac. One of the most powerful songs that I think Tupac that I've ever heard of him was Brenda's Got a Baby. And where he's chronicling this story of this woman who gets pregnant, and in order to provide for this baby and her other kids, she's got to sell herself as a prostitute. The baby ends up at the trash heap, and Brenda ends up dead. And it's this really kind of a social polemic of sorts to talk about the current ills of that day. That's in the 90s, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fast forward to today, you got a guy like Kendrick Lamar, you know, saying stuff like, you know, I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak, but my gun might blow, but we gonna be all right, you know?
Right.
Why has Kendrick Lamar's voice resonated as this new prophet, this new contemporary philosopher within the hip hop generation, specifically or particularly with the Black Lives Matter movement? Why has he resonated so strongly there?
Yeah, well, I think one clear example is that Kendrick Lamar is willing to talk about these things. Hip-hop culture with its commercialization has also been watered down in its content in a lot of ways. Bigotry, misogyny, all these different things that demean women, demean the community is what's selling. And so in a lot of ways, a lot of hip-hop artists have veered away from their actual cultural or, humanitarian responsibilities. And when you look at Kendrick Lamar, he has that consciousness to actually speak to it. And just the fact that he's willing to speak to it and address these things with the level of talent that he has, I think he's caught the ear of a lot of people who are popping his CD or streaming him on Spotify or whatever. But what I think also, when you look at the worldview of Kendrick, right? So Kendrick, if you look at him in an interview and he talks about his story, how him and his friends actually encountered an evangelist who preached the gospel to him, right? He has this spirituality. He also has this idea of this Jesus or this God who is not just deistic, who is not just far away in the clouds and kind of just put creation into order. When you look at Kendrick Lamar, I think his spirituality kind of infuses his idea of justice. He believes that in order for this Jesus to really work, he's on the concrete. He's here in the concrete jungle. He's here in Bompton. He's here wanting to see people liberated. And I believe that with Kendrick Lamar, with that spirituality, he also has some kind of pan-Africanist views. He's really about kind of bringing the community together. He's about us investing back into our communities. And all of those things, man, tied together, I think has really platformed him as kind of a vocal leader for Black Lives Movement. And even with the lyrics that you quoted, right? You know, we gonna be all right. There is this tension, even with the Black Lives Matters movement that is a little different from the Civil Rights Movement we have witnessed. There is this tension that they're not necessarily all the way committed to the Black church or the nonviolence movement. It hasn't fleshed out on what that philosophy is going to be, but Kendrick Lamar and his artistry is pushing the limits and asking, you know, what is the solution for us? How are we going to move forward? And I think that resonates with those who kind of grasp onto not just Black Lives Matter in principle, but Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah, that's good. You know, one of the things I find interesting about Kendrick is he talks about everything from from loving a woman to mass incarceration. You know, he had that performance where he's coming out in chains and he's in the prison blues. He's talking about he's talking about violence in Black communities. He's also talking about injustice against Black folks. He's talking about, you know, when it comes to King Kunta, he's kind of, you know, correlating the slave culture, the ongoings of slavery, particularly having your foot cut off or trying to run away, kind of this maiming of Black people. Right. And he's doing so on perhaps the biggest stage in America. And so, you know, one of the things about justice, you talked about justice. One of the things about justice is that most churches in America would tell you that the church stands for justice. They would tell you that the church is a mechanism for divine justice coming to earth, which, if we're honest, I think in a lot of ways the church has balked and failed at, and sometimes has even been complicit in the deferred justice for people of color. You look back to Dr. King's letter from a Birmingham jail, you know, why we must not wait. You look back at, you know, the early parts of the 20th century when white people were complicit in the forming of white citizens councils and in the Ku Klux Klans and these other fraternal organizations aimed at the institutional oppression of persons of color. For someone like you and me who love the church and who work in a multi-ethnic context, can we learn from artists like Kendrick Lamar? Can we learn about justice from those men, or should we just take what they do as purely art, set it to the side, and continue to move forward with a biblical ideal of pursuing justice this side of heaven?
Yeah, no, that's a great analysis, great question. And I think, you know, sometimes we adhere to theological truths, but don't actually apply them to our lives. And I think for those who might be Reformed or those who might be conservative in their theology, I'm kind of just reemphasizing these categories of the image of God. You know, these brothers are created within the image of God. There is something being reflected of God's moral truth, his value, and his wisdom. Of course, shattered, of course, impartial. You know, a lot of the reformers and church fathers, you know, kind of said this statement in various different ways. All truth is God's truth. Regardless of the vehicle that it comes through. Not only that, but I would also just, you know, kind of just look at it from the perspective of revelation, you know, that we have natural revelation. We have revelation that is being communicated through us. We have revelation that's being communicated through nature. We can grasp that and we can learn from it. And so when we talk about these artists, I think it's a product of privilege and in some instances, even racism to dehumanize them in a way that we cannot learn anything from them as if they're just puppets, right? Or they're just minstrels. They're actually not actually communicating anything that's informative. The other side, Jason, man, that is so interesting about everything that you said about Kendrick is this is what the Black church had to offer during the civil rights movement.
Wow.
This is where you found community and dignity because you were created in the image of God. It's where you found place of honor because you had a title in front of your name instead of the N-word in where you worked. This is where you found out that God has actually cared for us, that there's Black people in the Bible, that Simon of Cyrene carried Jesus' cross, that there's an Ethiopian eunuch, that there is the genealogy of African descent, even in the book of Genesis. This is where you find all of these social justice issues, right? A book of Amos quoted famously by Martin Luther King several occasions, you know, justice will roll down. All these things is what the Black church actually offered. I think with the Black church and the evolution of where we got into was some of the success we seemingly were attributed to during the end of Jim Crow and segregation. And then we kind of got slack in talking about these issues, talking about justice, talking about being created in the image of God, talking about community empowerment, and all those things being a product of the gospel. They're all products of the gospel. Now, it's not the gospel, right? The gospel mm-hmm. is Jesus Christ's work on our behalf. But we believe that if we have that vertical reconciliation, it implies horizontal reconciliation that often results in reparations, that often results in transformation of communities, because the gospel is that powerful. And that's what I think the hip hop community has been embracing. So many of our brothers and sisters is because they're talking about these things. And then oftentimes for us as brothers and sisters, with brown and beige skin as myself, we get assimilated into evangelical contexts that may touch on these topics, but not with the force they need to be addressed in. So going back to Tupac, right, talking about Brenda's got a baby. Mm-hmm. A lot of evangelicals will say, man, we are against abortion. You should not abort that baby. But going further, and what Tupac is talking about, let's talk about the systemic oppression that actually pushes young black women to pursue abortion as their only option.
Yep.
But does that, why is she thinking about abortion? Economic depravity, the breakdown of her family, educational barriers, the condition of her schools. Let's talk about all these various things that are contributing to abortion, the systemic oppression that is leading up to it, and then make that a justice factor as well.
Man, that's good. And, you know, none of us choose where we're born or into what family we're born in, or even none of us choose what conditions that we're born into. And a lot of times those conditions, particularly historically amongst African Americans, have been in situations that involve poverty, improper policing, so on and so forth. And there's a lot of folks who would say, you know, Cam, they would say, well, you know, I worked so hard. I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps. Right. If you apply yourself, if you just pull your pants up, if you wear a belt, if you speak proper English, then you will succeed. The world, the playing field is flat. And that could not be farther from the case, particularly for one reason. And you touched on it at the very beginning of when you started talking, and that is the Imago Dei and the image of God. And you talked about black people being in the Bible. I'll take that a step further. It wasn't until I got to seminary that I realized that men like Athanasius and Augustine, these men that reformed conservative Christians hold in such high esteem, were actually Africans, right? And there's an Imago Dei that somehow, the image of God somehow, and even racially somehow, gets scrubbed from those guys. But yet we racialize and see things in our context today as, you know, well, black people are the problem when they don't dress well, when they don't speak well, when their pants are below their waist, so on and so forth. And while I understand there's a case to be made for what some would call respectability politics, there's also the sense in which I think we have to see the image of God in one another primarily with dignity, and seeing the dignity in one another. And that was one of the points you hit on. And at Legacy, it's one of the points you talked about was dignity within those in the hip hop generation who I think it could be easy to see them as nuisances or thugs or miscreants or some other malevolent figures. When you think about dignity and the image of God, when you think about black humanity, when you think about humanizing blackness, what are some of those things that you begin to think about in the context of the hip hop generation?
Yeah, well, when you were making your comments, one thing that came to mind off top that we kind of been touching on is the what we see in predominant cultures a lot of times we struggle with is the dehumanization of our intellectual capacity. And I think that is on both sides for believers and unbelievers. And so one of the examples we kind of see this played out is if you go to, you know, a typical Christian bookstore or the library of an evangelical pastor, and let's say African-American walks into his office and he sees that all the authors are white. What does that articulate to this brother in that capacity? There's almost like this ethnic intellectual racism to say that black people have not been able to contribute to the scope of Christian theology, where, as you just touched in, Athanasius, Augustine, and Tertullian, a lot of the church fathers are from the continent of Africa, or at least dwelt there and wrote their theology from there. And then on the other side, as we're talking with the hip hop generation, and I'm just thinking about urban pastors, multi-ethnic pastors who aren't engaging this context, there's some hypocrisy there, because when we go to our favorite Christian blogs, we have no issue with seeing Christopher Hitchens on the blog, right? Or author engaging Christopher Hitchens, or doing a debate with Christopher Hitchens, and yet still admiring his intelligence and admiring all the intellectual contributions he has made. But when we do it with a person of color, all of a sudden we're labeled, we're liberal, or we shouldn't be reading that person or have that person on our bookshelves. Where we could say that about a lot of our evangelical scholars in past history, and even scholars now who may have some flaws, but they're still on the bookshelves of some of our favorite theologians. And so when we talk about dignity, I think one of the biggest parts is intellectual dignity, in terms of the Imago Dei. And people within this hip hop generation, we need to recognize that these are our leading thinkers. These are our leading poets and musicians, and we have to engage them on that aspect. The other part is, man, to think about the context that we're in, with everything that is happening in the news, that this heart cry of Black Lives Matter is really, really heart echoing Black Lives Matter too, because we're suffering at the hands of police brutality and systemic injustice. And so for us to understand that, you know, we have to be able to lament with our brothers and sisters who are suffering this, instead of automatically trying to defend our dignity as well. To understand that I'm created in the image of God, and so is my brother and sister who may be of different ethnic descent, allows me to relinquish my right to fight for any of my privilege, any of my power, and then to open my hand, because I see my brother on the road to Jericho. And when I see my brother on the road to Jericho, regardless of the ethnic distinctions we may have, I want to honor his image, and I want to risk my life for him. I want to lay down my life for him. I want to leave money at the end for him, because I want to see him recover. I think all of those things are dignity problems. They have to be rooted in the image of God. And we have to be able to say that for people in this generation, man, this part of this hip hop generation.
Man, that's good. I want to zoom in on particularly the Black Lives Matter movement, and the what seems to be almost a fueling of that movement from voices like, you know, Kendrick or even Chance the Rapper, some of these other people who in their lyrics are crying out for the humanity and the dignity of Black people. And when I consider BLM, from where I sit, they're in a sense, it seems like Black Lives Matter, the movement exists because the eschatological hope of justice appears to be a stillborn hope, right? The eschatological idea of hope and justice, right, is a stillborn hope, meaning Black people have long prayed to the great emancipator. They've always looked across the Jordan. They've always looked to the other side of this life, i.e. heaven, life with Christ and God, as the place where hope exists. Even when my present situation is going to kill me, even when my present situation is miserable, when my people are being oppressed and killed and maimed and raped, like, as long as this world right now is insufferable, there's a day that's coming that won't be. And Black Lives Matter seems to exist because we're tired of waiting, or they rather are tired of waiting for the eschatological reality of hope, or really in some senses don't believe in it, which is why lyrics like Kendrick, when he says, "I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow," like the church and religion has been a place where we've had our hope, but you know what? My knees are getting weak. I'm tired of playing. I want to see hope, and justice now. I want to see justice today. I'm not going to wait on some eschatological hope that many don't believe will ever come, or it seems like it's a dream deferred, but I want to see it today. And so, you know, one, would you agree with that? And two, what is the church's role in bringing about justice, particularly for persons of color today?
That's good. I wouldn't agree with that. You know, I think that the hope of heaven actually fuels us for the fight for justice on here on earth. My professor, Mark Furtado, talked about the Hebrew worldview and how they viewed eternality and also living here in the present day and age as pilgrims. And he summarized it as this: yes, there is pie in the sky, but there's also pie on the plate. So I think that pie on the plate should fuel us, you know. And I think this was touched on by Jesse Williams in his kind of BET Awards speech, where he said, you know, the hereafter is a hustle. To kind of flesh out his thoughts, I can't, you know, read his motivations or actually know what he might have meant there completely. But contextually, you know, we can break that down to say that basically, the Black church or spirituality or the idea of heaven has pacified our fight for justice. And man, I just disagree with that. I disagree with that historically, number one. I think a person who would make that argument does not know the history of Christianity nor the history of Black Christians in America. It has been the hope of heaven that has allowed us to endure suffering, that has allowed us to look at our suffering redemptively without actually committing suicide. You know, we hear it all the time. I would have lost my mind. I would have killed myself if it had not been for the Lord on my side. Now, the Lord being on my side doesn't mean that I just sit there and wait. That means when I go to work, God goes to work because the Holy Spirit is working in me. And so I believe that heaven and the hereafter gives us a hustle. I believe it fuels us to lay down my life. How can Martin Luther King Jr. march and still be able to know that people are going to throw rocks at his head because he knows that this is a temporary tent and Jesus Christ will raise him up on the last day? How can I give up my riches? How can I leave all the accoutrements and accommodations of the suburbs and live in the hood and serve that community? It's because I know that this is not my home. And so I think that actually the fight for justice is fueled by knowing that this is not our home. This is a temporary dwelling place where God is redeeming it through the witness of the saints. And so I think the church has to participate in that. I think the church has to back that. And more importantly, we have to preach that. We have to preach Jesus Christ. When I look at Leviticus 19, and we look at all the justice that is going to be laid out in there in terms of reparation, caring for the stranger, all of these community guidelines God has given us to care for those people who are living around us. The first thing that comes is the sacrifice of the lamb. And I believe that we have to talk about justice from a gospel-centered standpoint, or we'll lose justice altogether.
That's good.
I think apart from just the popular art forms, there are some scholarly works being done by scholars such as Anthony B. Penn, who are actually articulating Black humanism as a better avenue for pursuing the advancement of the African-American community. And I would argue that unless we presuppose Christianity, we'll lose the ability to do that consistently.
That's good. That's good. So let's zoom in. Let's zoom in for a minute on preaching. It is the preaching event is the thing that I love. Man, I love it so much. And I love what happens in the preaching event. I love the concept of God using broken people, earthen vessels to communicate the divine revelation of himself to people. And I love the Holy Spirit's transforming work in preaching. And so when we consider preaching, growing up, you know, you told me earlier that you grew up in the Black church growing up. And so you're probably no stranger to Hoopin' and the Doc Watts hymns and, you know, a heavy eschatological emphasis in preaching, the emotiveness in preaching. But there's a sense in which millennials today don't hold the same high view of the church as maybe our generation or definitely the one before us did, which makes preaching challenging to a generation whose prophets are of the likes of Kendrick and Chance and even, you know, trap music's finest from Chief Keef to, you know, a slew of other guys. And so, you know, when you think about preaching to the hip hop generation, what are some things that you're keeping in mind as you're communicating the truth of the gospel? Is it just contextualization? Is it just providing powerful and poignant illustrations, or is it something else? What does preaching look like for you in the in that context?
I look at it as really coming to the pulpit as a missionary to contextualize the gospel of Jesus Christ. Contextualization isn't the key. Contextualization isn't the vehicle. I mean, it's not the destination, it's the vehicle. So we get into that car of contextualization to drive people towards Jesus Christ. He's always the point and the center. And so there's some things that I would keep in mind. Number one is that we're living in the most illiterate generation that's biblically and maybe even thinking in terms of educationally. And so what I need to do is I need to make sure that my preaching is really in a common man's language. I need to make sure that I'm not preaching categories that are foreign to people unless I'm explaining and defining those categories. So many times in this past generation of Christendom in America, right, we have presupposed people knowing the stories of the Bible or the accounts of the Bible. And you can no longer do that, especially within the hip hop generation. People may not know that Daniel makes it out alive of the lion's den. And so just don't make the reference that you guys know the story. The second point is people may know the stories, but they may look at it as a primarily a moral indicative. Right. They may look at it as a moral story of kind of how I pull myself up. Or, you know, God can do this for me if I obey these certain rules and do this spiritual hokey pokey. I can twist God's arm to kind of follow me in whatever my directions and my aspirations. But being Christocentric from the text, showing people Jesus from the text and showing them how the gospel actually disarms us from our idols so we can advance in obedience towards Christ is a whole nother story. I would also just encourage those who are preaching to a hip hop generation. I would for the most part, you have to be on the ground. This is back to X17. You have to be in the community. You have to be in conversations because number one, no matter what culture we talk about at large, right? And for a podcast like this, this is a national podcast. The truth is that there's not a hip hop culture. There's a hip hop cultures. And so your community has its own culture. Your community has its own philosophers and people that they're following. So you have to get on the ground like Acts 17. That look, before Paul spoke, he observed the city and the idols that was there. And that's what gave him the burden to communicate. And so I would just encourage everybody who was considering preaching, contextualizing to a hip hop generation. It's not an academic pursuit that is void of being in community centers and in churches that are already there doing it.
Yeah. As you were talking, I began to think about a young man, sophomore in high school. I was mentoring when I was in the city before I moved to Memphis. And as I began to meet with this young man, grew up in poverty, grew up with his grandmother being mama. And it wasn't until I started listening to Black Youngsta and Yo Gotti that I could actually understand his worldview. And there was a sense, you talk about being on the ground, there was a sense in which I had to understand his worldview before I could really do meaningful ministry in order to love him well. Now, I'm not saying that the gospel doesn't meet people where they're at and it doesn't address people where they're at. And the Lord has been in the business of transforming and redeeming people, even those of the simplest of tongues. However, there is something really powerful when you're willing to step down into or step up into the world of someone and understand them, understand their influences, understand their language to begin to speak to them in a way that the gospel would minister to them. And so I was able to take, a theologian like Augustine that many of our evangelical brothers have co-opted and given a race that was not his, that he was born with, and talk about Augustine's issues with a fatherless home. Talk about Augustine's issues with getting a woman pregnant out of wedlock. Talk about Augustine's issues in wrestling with loving God when false religion and false teaching was the prevailing wind of the day. And I'm taking Augustine, I'm pairing it with lyrics of Black Youngster, and I'm like ministering to this guy. So when you talk, when you talk about being in it with people, when you talk about understanding that, when you talk about, hey, I see the statues to a God who has no name, right? Even Paul bringing in the poets of the day, in him we live and move and have our being, and other poets that he's bringing into the context, man, I just think it's so important preaching to a generation who's so heavily influenced by hip hop, those aspects of Christianity. And we're not contextualizing to lose the power of the gospel, right, Cam? Like I'm not watering anything down. I'm not removing anything. I'm not extracting anything. I'm not adding anything. What I'm simply doing is I'm communicating the truths of the gospel in the heart language of people that I'm trying to reach.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, what I would describe it as, man, we're just putting Windex on the window so you can see clearly, right?
That's good.
I mean, we're not changing what's actually inside. We're not rearranging the furniture in any kind of way. But we want to be able to articulate it so clearly that we're disarming all objections and misunderstandings of what the gospel is.
Man, that's a good word. Finally, brother, what is the hope of this type of thinking in regard to preaching to the hip hop generation? So we can talk about methods. We can talk about, methodology. We can talk about how we do things, man. But what is the ultimate hope? Why is this important? Why is this podcast important? Why is preaching to the hip hop generation important? What is the hope of all of this?
So this might sound controversial, right? So, but I'll clarify, and every listener has to agree with this. I believe there are other avenues that will help the urban context. I believe we need community centers. I believe we need to have nonprofits that are talking about mass incarceration, right? But all those other things are beneficial, but the ultimate benefit is the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And so the ultimate hope for me is revival. The ultimate hope for me is for to see healthy churches advancing and multiplying, affirming the Imago Dei, but also talking about the redemption of the cross of Jesus Christ, and then seeing that flesh itself out and the reconciliation in urban communities and between us and our brothers and sisters across all ethnic barriers. I think we have to think about preaching to this generation because it is multi-ethnic, it's multi-generational. And in a lot of ways, it holds the future for us advancing the gospel of the kingdom here in America and abroad.
Man, brother, that's good. Cameron Triggs, bro, thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate your words, man. Praying that God would continue to use your words, your voice, your influence to not only reach the hip hop generation, but also the church. Brother, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org.